Love Talk Radio.
Good evening. You are listening to Face Your Fears, Block Talk Radio, hosted by yours truly, Evangelist Norma Chapman. Let's pray. Father God, we thank you for another opportunity that you have given us, Father God, to reach out and help somebody that's in need. We pray, Father God, that someone that's out there listening on today, Father God, can find the answer to some of their problems, that they may be, Father God, able to come out of any situation that they are in. Today, we are delighted to have you listening in on our show. My guests today are the Honorable Judge Morris W. Reed and Mrs. Jasmine Lewis, Regent of Regional Outreach Coordinator for the Domestic Violence at the Wellspring. Good evening, Judge Reed and Mrs. Lewis.
Hello,
Hello, how are you all doing?
Okay, at this time, let me do a little introduction about myself. I am the author of the book, What Faith Can Do. I'm also a domestic violence survivor. My incident, tragic, happened to me in the year of 1990, March the 30th, where my loved one shot me twice in the liver, stabbed me an inch from my heart, and I lay in a coma for 40 days. I had 6-day blood transfusion, 7 surgeries. I am blessed to be here on today to share my story with you listeners out there and hope that it can help save someone's life or prevent them from being in the same situation. We will begin by letting Judge Morris Reed introduce himself. Following, Mrs. Lewis will give you a short bio about herself. Judge Reed.
Thank you very much, Evangelist Chapman. It's indeed a pleasure to be here with you, along with Ms. Lewis, to talk about a serious problem plaguing our community, and not just in our community, but throughout the state as well as the country. You know, I've served as a prosecutor as well as a police officer and a special agent with the Department of Justice, federal prosecutor handling civil rights matters, and those various roles, and then eventually a judge, also under the late Mayor Dutch Muriel, the first African-American mayor in the city of New Orleans. I was the first director of the Office of Municipal Investigation. But throughout my 35-year, 40-year career in law enforcement and the law and judicial system, one of the most gratifying experiences that I had was serving on the board of one of the first battered women and children's shelter. It's located in the Garden District area, uptown New Orleans, and the name of it was My House. I think it's still in existence today. And it was a facility that was made available about individuals who wanted to give back something to the community. And they presented this house to the community as a location for women who had to flee their residence from loved ones, boyfriends, husbands. It's primarily for women and children, and it served a useful purpose, and I think as a spinoff, there were others developed. But one of the common threads, and I talked about this with Evangeline Chapman, I'm sure Ms. Lewis is going to touch upon it, one of the most common threads I found in presiding as a judge over criminal cases,
at this time, I would like Ms. Lewis first to do the introduction, and we'll go into the show afterwards.
I'm sorry. I've been known to be somewhat talkative. Go ahead.
My name is Jessalyn Lewis. I am a resident of Monroe, Louisiana. I am the Regional Outreach Coordinator for the Wellspring. We have a domestic violence program. I've been with the program for 15 years. I'm also a survivor of domestic violence and sexual assault. I've been out of my abusive marriage for 9 years. Come April 28th, My job is not just a job for me, it is also ministry, and I absolutely love what I do.
Thank you, Judge Reed and Mrs. Lewis. Our topic today will be how to survive and free yourself from a domestic violence lifestyle. You will learn how to speak out and confront your fears about your abuse. Once you have faced all the obstacles in your path that's standing in your way, keeping you bound and chained down, being abused, misused, disrespected, and controlled by someone you once loved or still think you are in love with, then you can move forward. This episode will guide you and help you realize how important your life is in many ways, how deadly your life is if you continue to live in that environment. Join in and listen to all the reasons why you can escape, why you should escape, and finally be set free to live an incredible life on your own without being afraid. Mrs. Lewis,
yes,
what advice can you give to a person who memorized the violence and the effect thereof?
Well, first of all, as a survivor of domestic violence, I have to say that while I was still in my abusive marriage, one of the things that I did most often was to minimize what my ex-husband was doing to me. I often said that, well, he pulled the gun on me, but he didn't shoot me. Or he put a knife to my throat, but he didn't actually cut me. And so in my mind, that minimized the level of lethality that I was actually in, not realizing that I should never have compared myself to what someone else was going through. And so my advice to someone who is in an abusive relationship is to never minimize what you're going through. If it's abuse, it's abuse. There is no level to it. There is no, it's not that bad.
Thank you. Judge Reed, how many cases you actually presided over in reference to this crime, this deadly crime, domestic violence? How many cases did you actually presided when you were judge, the criminal court building here in the city of New Orleans?
Oh, hundreds of cases. I mean, they didn't all result in incarceration. They didn't all result in, you know, serious bodily injury, but there was always mental anguish and mental abuse, even in absence of physical abuse. But sometimes I'm sure it was a factor in an individual maybe becoming dependent upon alcohol or drugs to try to escape the situation that they were in. What I was about to say earlier is that one of the problems that we found, that the social workers found, and it seemed to be so much more resources are given to prevention and treatment and facilities made available to battered women as a result of being in turbulent relationships. But one of the common threads I found with a lot of the victims in cases I handled, both on the prosecutorial side as well as defense side, because I've defended women who were charged with physical abuse and violent abuse, retaliating against or trying to defend themselves against individuals who were abusing them, and in some instances it resulting in the death of the abuser. One of the things that I found in talking to victims of domestic violence was that a lot of times women would conceal the fact that they were being, and maybe Ms. Lewis can address that, were being abused at home from their family and friends because they didn't want to, because of embarrassment. They didn't want their friends or loved ones to know about it, and so they kept it inside the home. And so that worked in favor of the abuser because a lot of times the abuse started with mental abuse and then it started maybe with a slap, and then later it became a punch, and the guy would say, well, I got away with that. Let me try something else. and then the striking with a weapon, and then maybe a cutting, and then it leads to something and more aggravated, only because it wasn't nipped in the bud when the verbal abuse first started. So I would advise a victim and potential victims, talk to your family, talk to your clergy, talk to your friends, your girlfriends, and discuss what's happening in your household. And you have to put embarrassment aside and share what's going on in your life with friends. So everybody doesn't jump up and say at the end of the day when something extremely violent takes place and either you retaliating against the abuser or the abuser hurting you seriously, we didn't know anything about it. We had no idea. So you must share what's happening with you. Share it with someone that you trust.
Okay. Thank you for that. Ms. Lurie, let me ask you, who can a victim tell so they can have documentations on their abusers?
Well, often as survivors, we are very fearful of calling the police. Most times, not until we know for sure that we are absolutely ready to go. And so with that being said, some of the other people that we can use for documentation are our pastors or when we go to the doctor. The doctors have even started asking now if there is any abuse going on at home. So definitely we can speak with our doctors. We can also keep a journal for ourselves. The only thing about that is we have to be careful that we keep it in a place that is undisclosed to the abuser so that he does not find it and know that we are actually keeping the documentation.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Now, records are showing that domestic violence is the leading cause of injuries to women, more than a car accident, the mugglings of women, and even rapes combined. Mrs. Lewis, can you give me some input on that? And afterwards, Judge Morris, please give you a short input on your thoughts on that as well.
Ms. Lewis,
Sure. We definitely know that, domestic violence is much more prevalent than people even realize. However, here in the state of Louisiana, in Monroe, in Ouachita Parish, we have seen a 74% reduction in the rate of domestic violence here, and that's based on the numbers from the Louisiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence. I have to believe that some of that can be attributed to the Wellspring, the services that we offer here at the Wellspring and the Family Justice Center. And I think that we are making such a huge impact because of the community coordinated response that we have here in Ouachita Parish. We work very closely with the Monroe Police Department, West Monroe Police Department, and Ouachita Parish Sheriff's Office. So with all of us working hand in hand, it is truly helping us here in this parish to see a reduction in the rate of domestic violence.
Thank you, Judge. Can you give me just a short input on that question, and we'll move on quickly to the next one?
Well, what jumps out at me is the numbers might be down in terms of the number of cases in domestic violence, but their studies have shown that when the economy is bad and folks are suffering economically, there's noticeable trend, upward trend of domestic violence taking place among married and living couples. So because it puts more stress on the relationship, the individual is jobless, resorting to drug abuse and what have you, that will impact the relationship. And with a dependency on drugs and alcohol, obviously that's going to relax inhibitions and person might be more prone to commit a violent offense. I am alarmed and seriously concerned about the intensity of the violence perpetrated in these cases, regardless whether the number is up or down. that we have seen recently in the last few years, where individuals take revenge against not only his live-in companion, but the violence is spilling over to minor children and engaged in a relationship in that same family unit. So the violence seemed to be intensified, and I like to think that's being driven by drug abuse with these psychedelic drugs that we have in the marketplace now, like fentanyl and OxyContin and what have you. So we have to be ever vigilant about that and do what we can with programs like Ms. Lewis have in combating this and, you know, engaging the church, engaging the medical profession, and hopefully working with law enforcement to curtail drug trafficking in our community, because it impacts the entire family unit, in my opinion.
Okay, thank you, Judge Morris. I'm still looking for a yes or a no answer to the question, domestic violence. Is domestic violence the leading cause of injuries to women, more than car accidents, muggings, and rapes combined? Is that a yes, or it isn't, or is it, Ms. Lewis?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. The next question, Ms. Lewis, and then Judge Reed. Half of our homeless women, is it true that half of our homeless women and children in the United States are fleeing from domestic violence? Is that true or not true?
I would definitely say that there is a percentage of the homeless who are fleeing domestic violence. I'm not sure if it's 50%, but I'm sure there's a great percentage.
Okay. But Judge Marjorie, let me ask you, when you were presiding as judge and over domestic violence case, were there any cases in reference to you all had to move the victims from one from out of the area to another state or another city in order that they would be safe from their abusers?
Well, I'm not familiar with any program. When I was on the bench, no, we didn't see resources from the state or the city to relocate individuals out of the city. I mean, we had individuals who were witnesses to terrible crime in this community the city occasionally, the district attorney's office would move them from one side of the city to the other, but I was always critical of that. But we just lacked the resources that the federal government had. Unless a person was involved somewhere with federal law enforcement where the federal resources could come into play, no, the city's resources were somewhat limited. And you were lucky at the time, because I'm retired now, if you were able to relocate, you know, to another part of the city from one ward to another, but not to relocate you out of the city. We look to relatives to come in and friends to come in and pitch in and try to help. That's what we did in situations like that when I was on the bench.
Thank you. Ms. Lewis,
yes,
why are so many victims silent about the abuse they endure? Why are they so silent about it?
Well, I think the judge kind of touched on that a little bit earlier when he said that so many victims and survivors are embarrassed. Definitely domestic violence is probably one of the most degrading and one of the most dehumanizing acts that can be done to a person. So a lot of times we're silent because we are embarrassed and we're ashamed. The other thing is that we're afraid to tell anyone. We're not sure if we're going to be able to get away with our lives or if our children are going to be in danger. So a lot of times we keep the secret hoping that we'll survive.
Okay, let me add, also I think that the reason why some of victims do not tell their relatives about their abusers is because they be afraid of getting their families in trouble, their brother, or maybe an aggressive sister or somebody will go and retaliate on their abusers, so they're afraid that they may hurt their abusers or their abusers may hurt their family. Would you agree with that?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
Judge Morris, are men victims of domestic violence?
Yes, they are. They can be. There are situations where individuals, the male gender, find themselves in situations where they are subject to abuse. Not as frequently as women, though.
Well, from my experience in study, that is that 4 in 5 victims of domestic dating and sexual violence between 1994 and 2010 were females. When I was a child, we were used to a lot. I heard a lot about the husbands beating the wives and, you know, violence in the home. But now, for me, going around speaking on domestic violence, I found that girls and women are just as aggressive as the men. We find that a lot of women now is in prison for murdering their husbands or for being abusive to their boyfriend. Would you agree with me on that, Mrs. Lewis?
Yes, ma'am. We definitely know that women have become somewhat more aggressive. However, according to statistics, we know that 1 in 4 women is a victim of domestic violence, whereas when it comes to men, it's 1 in 7. So we are seeing an increase in men survivors, but they are definitely there.
Yes, go ahead.
And 60%, would you agree, 60% to 80% of inmates partner homicides, no matter which partner were killed. The male physically abused the woman before the murder, and in most cases they had to come before you before they actually murdered their victims. A lot of them appeared before you as, like I asked you earlier, as repeated offenders before anyone actually had killed their partner. Can you give us a little insight on that or touch on that a little bit for me?
Well, I think that Ms. Lewis scratched the surface on that earlier in one of her comments. I think it's a... I'm not saying that there's never any situations where there's just an abrupt eruption of anger and violence as a result of one isolated incident. I think that there's always some telltale signs which manifest that you're dealing with a potentially violent person and you should extricate and get yourself out of the situation. My concern is that if you stay in that situation, then it might put you in a position where you have to defend yourself and you end up murdering or killing someone. It wouldn't be murder. It would be a homicide. And in Louisiana, and like most southern states, they don't recognize in the law there's no legal defense under the title of the battered women syndrome. Not like California and some other liberal states, the defense is recognized. But the last I checked, Louisiana did not recognize that you can be in a domestic violence situation for a long period of time and just wear you down mentally, and that you might cause you to erupt in the defense of yourself and kill your live-in spouse or friend. A partner, a companion, and end up in a delicate legal situation dealing with the state trying to defend yourself to keep your freedom. So in that situation, I see defense attorneys try to get in as much information as possible, but Louisiana laws limit the amount of information that you just can't bring in a battered women's syndrome defense per se. And it puts a woman at a disadvantage, even when she had to defend herself in a violent situation. So I've seen that. So we have to be cognizant of that, and that should be more incentive for women to seek outside intervention and when they're in a situation like that, because you don't want to be forced into a situation where you have to resort to lethal force in order to protect yourself. And when you have legal scholars looking at your case later on, they might not see it as you saw it, because you're looking at it from the lens of a battered woman, and they are not. And a jury will not, may not sympathize or empathize with you if you get yourself caught up in a delicate situation where you have to defend yourself and resort to violence that leads to someone dying.
Thank you, Judge. So you both would agree with me if I said the cost of domestic violence amount to more than $37 million a year in law enforcement, environment, legal work, medical and mental health treatment, and lost productively at our companies. Would you agree with that?
I definitely agree with that, but I would like to go back and just comment a little bit on the laws that we have here in the state of Louisiana. And we do have senators such as Karen Peters and Senator Moriel who are trying to help us to come up with tougher laws for the state of Louisiana, because we are so far behind time that a lot of times these abusers get away with what they've done because of the laws that we have. And I've actually gone and lobbied at the state and even testified so that we could get tougher laws. So that, you know, it's definitely, we are definitely behind the times here in the state of Louisiana. But yes, ma'am, I do definitely agree that a lot of our money spent comes from trying to assist survivors of domestic violence.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like to ditto that your statement.
Pardon me, Judge. Would you say something?
Yes, I agree with Ms. Lewis and with her response to that question. You know, the domestic violence was so pervasive that a famous movie director sought to include a statement about it. In one of a very popular movie, I think about The Color Purple, where one of the scenes dealt with a situation where man was encouraged by another actor in the play to get his wife under control by beating her. So it was something that was popularized in the South particularly, and it was something that individuals practiced, and in some cultures even today, and some cultures in foreign countries, violence against a woman by her husband is still acceptable. So it was somewhat tolerated more so in 50, 100 years ago than what it is now. So we have to break the custom and get people to respect others and elevate women on a higher, elevate women to a higher level of humanity to have a different mindset develop among individuals and society about what they can and cannot do with their loved ones and with their companions.
Thank you, Judge. We're going to open up the lines. I see we have callers that have questions they want to ask. So at this time, we're going to open up our lines and let our listeners come in with their questions. Good evening. You are on the line. You're on the air. Good evening. Hello? Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello?
Yes. This is Patricia Jackson calling.
Go ahead, Ms. Jackson. Thank you for calling in.
I have a battered women's shelter, and I find that when a woman is battered, not all of them, but a lot of them, the time you take with them to try to get them to understand and see the danger that they're in, they turn right around, and the first chance they get, they're making that contact with that they mate.
Okay.
What you think about that?
Who are you asking the question to, the judge, mistress, or myself?
The judge.
Well, I usually I handle cases primarily in criminal court when a violent act had occurred and individuals were, someone was waiting to go to trial. So something drastically had occurred to the point where the state had come into play, police officers had gone out to investigate, someone had made a complaint, and somebody was facing the wrath of the criminal justice system. But I had, and in most instances, let me say, I preface that by saying, I wanted to say this, is that there were stay-away orders that was put in place where there could be no contact, was not supposed to be any interaction or contact by one party or the other, and they had to stay within 100 feet or more from each other, weren't to contact the person by phone, send messages or what have you. I want to say negative things about a party to the children that they had in common, because I assume that if one party had the children, that the other party had visitation rights. So I could see some contact being initiated for a visitation of the children, or under the guise of getting money to that they're under a order to for child support to be paid, but you can do that through the court, and that will eliminate some of the contact. But judges have become much more vigilant about situations like that, and much more stricter, in my opinion, in trying to curtail violence, because we have had situations where individuals have walked out of court and swore that they were not going to, been ordered not to contact the party, walked out of court on bond and gone back into that vicinity of where the victim is, and perpetrated another act of violence against that victim. In some instances, have killed the victim. So when there's a violation, it should be reported to the social worker, or definitely to the court or to the police. And let me say this: that the domestic violence situation is very volatile. So much so that the police like to say, and I've heard them speaking at community meetings and what have you, and in court, that the domestic violence situation has the potential to explode at any moment, and it's so volatile that they attribute that most of the injuries to police officers, at least before 9/11, was initiated, caused by a situation of domestic violence. Situations where they were called out to break up a fight, a fuss, or argument between individuals who knew each other, or living together, or married, and in the course of it, the violence spilled over to a situation where police officers were injured or had to use force and hurt somebody, or ended up injuring someone, one of the parties.
Thank you, Judge. I think that Mrs. Jackson was asking in reference to the shelter. Is that right, Ms. Jackson? You wanted a question you was asking, because you said you will have a shelter for battered women or battered men. Am I correct?
Battered women, yes.
Battered women.
Yes.
And you were asking something in reference to shelter that you would like Ms. Lewis to answer, maybe?
Well, I was bringing the topic up about the women. There's women that's in shelters that still communicating with that man that abused them. and I was trying to find out, is there a law against that?
No, ma'am, there's not a law against that, but I would love to just address that. The reality of it is some women reach out to their abusers out of fear that if they don't reach out to them, what will happen once they are outside of the shelter? And the other thing is that, you know, the reality of it is that they are often still in love with that person who has abused them. So naturally, that's what they are accustomed to, that's what they're familiar with, and that's what they're going to go back to. They hate what the abuser has done to them, but they still love that individual. And because they say that we, you know, it takes 7 to 10 times before we leave and actually stay gone. I mean, just, it's just human nature that a lot of times that the people that they love, that's who they reach out to. And they've been manipulated into feeling that that they need the abuser and that the abuser needs them.
Okay, Mrs. Lewis, let's address that for elaborate on that for a minute. Why do it take 7 to 10 times to be abused for them, the victims, to make up their mind to leave the abuse? I know one of them is that it's fear. Another one is that they feel like they can't support themselves. They're not independent enough to leave. But
absolutely.
Psychologically looking at it, is that the main reason, or is it something else that's out there, Mrs. Jackson, that the women in your shelter or that you have talked with giving you another reason why it took them so long to make up their mind to come to your shelter? Can you answer that, Ms. Jackson?
I believe that the self-esteem is gone because a lot of men have women thinking that you can't make it without me. You understand? And once they leave, things is different from the way it was when you was with them. And they have the time to think about it, and they want to go back, not thinking that this could cause their life to end.
Well, let me ask you, Ms. Jackson, how long it was before you... And then after that, Ms. Lewis, you can answer the question as well as being a survivor. How long did it take you before you made up your mind to come from out of that environment?
With my first marriage right away. It didn't take no time.
So you're saying that you were married and your husband wasn't your abuser, am I correct?
Yes.
And what, the very first time he hit you or... 2 or 3 times, how long, you know, how many times it was before you finally made up your mind, like, I got to get out of here. I'm not going to, you know, allow this to happen in my life.
Well, with my first marriage, my husband was always gone. He was a seaman on the ship. And when he came home, he had someone waiting for him in front of the house. And the woman husband was looking for his wife, you know. So I went upstairs to find out what was going on, and that's when I saw her. I was pushed down a flight of stairs right after that. And that made me realize again that, hey, you don't care nothing about me. First of all, they have another woman in my home, and you want to destroy me. And I let him alone.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson, because we're almost running out of time, and I have a lot of callers on the phone. But I would like to want Mrs. Lewis to answer that before you hang up, Mrs. Jackson. Let Ms. Lewis, can you answer that question as well? How long, how many times it took you before you finally got out?
I think I left approximately 5 times. It may have been 7, but what I remember distinctly is 5. But he was abusive before we got married, and we stayed married for 13 years. So Yeah, in that amount of time, I left several times.
Let me add to that while we're on that subject. As an abuser myself, I had no warning signs. What happened to me happened immediately, and never were any fighting or verbal abuse at all. It just happened, and I got caught up in the domestic as a domestic violence victim. Was shot, stabbed, and the only thing it was said that I love you, and I went to turn and say I love you too, and the shooting took place. So the reason that this is so important to the victims out there is that you may not have, or you may not be blessed as Mrs. Jackson and Mrs. Lewis and my, or myself to be able to testify to your abuse or what your abusers are doing to you. While you have an opportunity to get out of there, don't wait 5, 7, 6. I mean, the first time it happened, make up your mind, this is not for me, because it's going to happen again. They'll tell you, I'm sorry, I will never do it again. I mean, the judge was talking about the color of purple, but I'm going to bring back to your memories about Ike and Tina Turner. What love has to do with it? Look how many times it took Tina before Tina finally started fighting back, and then when she fought back, she was beat up more than the other beatings. That was the worst beating that took place, but she did have the courage to fight back, and then immediately, according to the story, she left the relationship. So we want to encourage you out there to take heed to what we're saying today and pray and ask God to come into your life and guide you, and you can make it, you know, and this is what we're talking about today, how you can survive and how you can move on and not be afraid and be able to face your fears and say, look, I've had enough. I'm ready to walk out of this relationship regardless of where, I don't know where I'm going to go, or you may even be confused with who you're going to call. But the main thing is making the first step out the door. And once you get out the door, with God's help, he's going to lead and guide you to safety. I want to thank Mrs. Jackson for joining us on today, sharing her story. And Mrs. Jackson, anything you want to share out there with the listeners in your area, if they are abused, what number they can call, or how can they contact you, Mrs. Jackson?
Well, they can get in touch with me with the police department. I'm connected with the police department.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And I go beyond the veil.
Okay. We want to thank you for joining us on today and join us again on this topic of domestic violence, which we are trying to. What's amazing is that a blessing United States as a whole. If we can get help for the abuser, you know, the less abuse we have. So we can get some help to helping them realize that, you know, I can live with my mate or my wife or my girlfriend. I can keep a relationship without putting my hands on her or him. You know, we can survive. We can have a beautiful relationship. And another thing is that if you're afraid that you can't, then I'm pleading that you go and get some help so you can learn how you can free yourself from that lifestyle. Some of our boys or girls may have come from a battered home when they were young, and this is what they, maybe they were abused. Their parents was abusive to them, and they feel like this is the only way I can live. This is how my father and my mother live, fighting and fussing and cussing all day and every day. No, that's not a good lifestyle. That's not a healthy lifestyle. That's not a godly lifestyle. So we want to thank you again for joining in, Mrs. Jackson, and I pray that you call back again on next Thursday. Thank you very much. All right, I want to say to the listeners out there, if you have anything to say or question, you can press the number 1 on your phone. It will show me an icon to let me know you want to say something on the show or have a question to ask. Until that appears, I think I'm going to keep on talking to the judge and Miss Lewis and continue on with the show. Remember, if you have anything to say, press number one on your phone. I'm constantly going down. We have a lot of callers on today. I want to thank all of you listeners out there. And do share your stories or just give some type of encouragement to our listeners if there are any victims or abusers out there. Thank you. Okay. We have another caller now. Good evening. You are on the line. Hello? Hello? Hello, caller.
Hello. I enjoyed the show very much. It was very informative. Keep up the good work. God bless you all.
Okay, who's calling?
This is Dolores Hollinshed.
Hello, Ms. Hollinshed. It's a pleasure having you on the show today. Thank you for calling. Anything you would like to share with the if we have any abusers or victims out there on domestic violence today?
No, I have not experienced domestic violence. I do know some people who have, and I think the statistics that you all gave was very informative. I would like Ms. Lewis maybe to give more information on how the public can get this legislation through the state legislature.
Thank you very much, and again, it is a pleasure having you on the show today, and do call back every week on Thursday. I'll be here giving information and trying to reach out, crying out to the victims and the abusers to face their fears. Again, thank you for calling the Holly Chair.
Thank you, and God bless you all.
Again, listeners, if you have any questions or want to say anything on the show, you can press 1 on your phone, and you can be able to speak on air. Okay, until I see that, we'll continue talking to Ms. Lewis, and I want to again thank Judge Morris Reed for tuning in on today's show, thanking them for all of the encouragement that they have shared and experienced with domestic violence. Judge Morris, is it possible,
yes,
and also Ms. Lewis, I would like for you, after Judge Morris, give me a short input on this next question. But before I ask the question, we have another caller that's on. Let's tune them in, and then we'll go to our next question, okay? Hello, you're on the air. Okay. Guess it was the wrong thing. Okay. The question is it possible for abusers to change? Is it possible?
Sure, I think it's possible. I do know that in order for an abuser to change, they have to be determined to change. Here in Ouachita Parish, we have a program called Batterers Intervention that is proving to be beneficial to abusers who are trying to transition from being abusive to their counterparts. So I definitely think that it is possible, but that person has to be determined and has to recognize the error of their ways. It's not likely, I'd like to say, but it is possible.
Thank you. Judge, you have anything you want to say on that particular question?
Well, I think the criminal justice system is set up to punish individuals, to deter individuals from similar conduct in the future. And that's the whole idea behind placing somebody on probation and placing them under supervision by probation or parole officer, having them enroll in different type of programs, nonviolent conflict resolutions, get them in Alcoholic Anonymous and some type of drug treatment if that's the problem. So, yes, it's possible for them to change. But, you know, Louisiana also has a high rate of recidivism. Individuals return to prison or return back into the system and have to get some incarceration and be separated from society because of their behavior and not conforming to the mores and values of and the laws of the community that they live in. So if they're not inclined to change short of incarceration, Louisiana incarcerates more individuals in the Western Hemisphere and in any English society. We incarcerate more individuals per capita based upon the number of people, 3.5 million people in this state. We incarcerate more people, and I think we're the highest in the country, and was exceeded by New Mexico at one time. And most of those individuals are African Americans, individuals of color. So it's something that we all, and if we live in this state and live in this city, we have to work towards doing better. And obviously, we hope that the threat of punishment and the threat of incarceration would cause someone to give them the incentive to change a behavior that keeping their hands off of other individuals and respecting the persons of other individuals. That's what the divorce court is for. And you can't live with a person, leave. Otherwise, you're going to end up as a statistic in the Louisiana penal institution.
Thank you, Judge. We have other callers calling in at this time. I'm going to let them come in and share their story. Good evening. You're on the air. Hello?
Good evening. Good evening.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Ella Davis. I am from North Louisiana. I have enjoyed what I've heard so far. You had mentioned briefly about why people become abusers. I wanted to know if there has been an in-depth study concerning why boys that turn into men, girls, of course, that turn into women, become abusers.
Ms. Lewis, you want to answer that question?
Often they have witnessed domestic violence while they were children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some of it. But other times it's different things like mental illness, which is something that we shy away from in the black community. That's something that we are so taboo about. And I think that a lot of times abusers do suffer some form of mental illness. A lot of people think that drugs and alcohol cause domestic violence. Drugs and alcohol do not cause domestic violence. They can possibly intensify it, but it does not cause it. And it's the same thing with we have different officials who send batterers to anger management. It's not an anger issue. If it were an anger issue, then they would fight their boss when the boss makes them angry, or they would fight someone at the church or just someone in the middle of the street. Abusers abuse their spouses and sometimes their children. So I think that education is a lot of the lack thereof is a lot of the reason that we have a lot of domestic violence and abuse going on.
Okay, and for those children that are in abusive homes, can you tell me if there are any programs in your area to help those children so that they will not become abusers?
Absolutely. The program that I work for, the Wellspring, one of our programs is a counseling center. And the children who have witnessed domestic violence are able to receive services through our program.
Okay. Now, is this mandatory for the children or voluntary?
No, ma'am, it's voluntary. Everything, we work on an empowerment basis, and so we make sure that our survivors have the information, but we're not able to force them to, you know, take their children to counseling.
Okay.
But it is available to them, and many of them make great use of it.
Okay, wonderful. All right, those were my questions.
Thank you, Miss Ella, for calling in again on today, and I pray that you continue being one of my loyal listeners. And it's always a pleasure hearing your voice. And again, I want to let the listeners know that Mrs. Ella is an author as well, and she has books that you may can give us a little information on that. And we're about to run out of time, so be very, very short, because I only have like maybe 4 minutes left, Miss Ella. Quickly, one of your books.
Okay. Well, can I give them my website address? Is that okay?
We're about to go off. I mean, we only have like 3 or 4 more minutes.
All right. www.helpingbooks.com. And my name is Ella Davis.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Davis. And
all right. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to run out of time, and the last questions I wanted to ask guest her today, and that will be the final question about domestic violence and its impact on our communities. Be very, very short. We have 2 minutes before closing. We'll let Ms. Lewis, and then just keep in mind we only have 2 minutes left, and I have to do my closing. Thank you.
Okay. Well, first of all, domestic violence does affect our community, mainly financially, but it also hurts our people. And as long as we have people dying and people hurting, we know that we have a lot of work to do. The Wellspring is doing everything that we can to prevent domestic violence, and if you need assistance, we are always here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Okay. Also, Ms. Lewis, can you give our listeners any number for national numbers they can call in? If there's abusers out there or victims that need help, can you share some websites or phone numbers or national on domestic violence hotline numbers that they can call?
Absolutely. The national hotline is 1-888-411-1333. And if you are in Monroe, Louisiana, you can always call 318-323-1505.
Thank you. Judge Morris Reed.
Yes, go ahead.
Judge Morris Reed, do you want to share any information on how a victim or an abuser, because I'm very concerned about these abusers, where they can call and get some help if needed? Very, very short.
Well, let me share two real-life stories. I think I like to end on this note. I found that a lot of times in these situations where the woman, the victim, I'm just talking about female gender, has really become
Ladies and gentlemen, we are at that time. We are about to run out of time, and I want to thank my guest.
Threatened. And maternal instinct kicks in, and the women can become very defensive and a lot of times become very, very, very violent and defending themselves. So, you know, I would caution these guys that you're out there, do not abuse those children in the presence of their mother, because you might get hurt if you do.
Thank you. We have ran out of time for today, and I'd like to thank my guest, Ms. Jaslyn Lewis, and also Judge Morris Reed for being on Face Your Fears Talk Show, hosted by Evangelist Norma Chapman. I want to encourage all of you listeners out there to join me again on next Thursday, where our topic will be a different topic. There will be important information and information that can help all of the any abusers or victim thus out. Again, we want to close thanking God for another opportunity to come on air today. Keep me in your prayers, and we will definitely keep you in our prayers. Have a blessed day. Goodbye.